Okay, today's daf is Kuf Bet. We're going to start at the bottom of Kuf Aleph Amud Bet. There's a quote here, it's Nan Hatam. Okay, just remember, keep this in mind. The last thing we ended off with yesterday was this issue they suggested when they were stuck with the numbers. They said maybe it was a kever for Nifalim in terms of the overlap. And they said, just like Rav Shisha Barid, Rav Edi said in a different case, it was talking about a kever for Nifalim, also maybe here, and that's why they don't overlap, right? When Rabbi Shimon's grave, I remember he had a hallway leading out to four caves, and then the four caves, if they jut out the way they jut out, right, they're going to overlap against each other. And then they said, well, maybe, like we said in a different place, it's Nifalim, so keep that in mind, because today we're going to see where Rav Shisha Barid, Rav Edi actually said it was about Nifalim. Okay, Tznan Hatam. We're going to quote a Mishnah which actually appears both in Nazir and in Ohalot. So maybe you'll recall from Nazir. We have Ohalot has no Gemara. Not in the Daf Yomi. Tznan Hatam says there, Hamotse meit mushkav kidarko, notzlo ve'et tefusato. If you find a dead body on the road, okay, you need some background. Before the Aliyah LaRegel, they tried to clean out the streets and make sure that the roads didn't have dead bodies, so the people who were going to do the Korban Pesach, right, wouldn't be tameh. That was like a big problem. So they would check around to see. Now, are you allowed to move? What's the issue? If they find bones and dead bodies, so they want to move them off the path so that people wouldn't become tameh. However, you can't just move dead bodies. So the question is, it depends. You can actually move dead bodies if they were put there not permanently, okay? So, for example, if, let's say, the path happens to go over a place where there used to be burial caves there, and there's a whole burial cave underneath, then you can't remove it, okay? You can't remove the path, right? You just have to move the path. Or what they would do is they'd put up signs, and they'd etch out this area and say, okay, there's tuma here, so don't walk here. But if we assume that the people were buried in there temporarily, and it wasn't a whole burial cave, it was just a body that, for whatever reason, got left aside and, was, the idea was, let's bury him temporarily and then we'll move him, okay? Or even if you find, like, a lone body, there's an assumption that either it could be a non-Jew, or, because generally Jews weren't just buried by themselves, or there's an assumption that it could be a Jew who was kind of, or like if you find even parts of body parts, like it looks like the body was cut off, then we assume that someone just left it there, or if it was in some position that you would never bury a Jew in that position, like a standing up position or a sitting position or something like that, then we'd know that it wasn't that it wasn't there permanently and you'd be allowed to move it.
Wouldn't you need to know if it was between two cities, isn't there a problem? Like, where is this?
That's if someone dies, and then that's if we find a dead body. Not this is someone who is buried, bones. Not just a dead body, right? Okay. This is when you're looking through the road and you find bones from something that was buried a long time ago. Okay, so if you find a mate mushkav kidarko, here we get to the kidarko. There's going to be two categories. There's one where it's clearly either not a Jew or a Jew that was just thrown on the path and wasn't actually buried properly, and then for sure you can remove it. Okay, that's like a vadai. The Mishnah's not even discussing that. But now if you find a mate mushkav kidarko, the way a mate is supposed to be buried, but just one mate, okay, you find one body. If we find one body, we assume it wasn't buried in a cave and it wasn't meant to be there permanently because people were generally buried in these caves with family members or other people, and therefore we're allowed to move it. How do you move it? Notzlo ve'et fusato. You take it and some of the dirt underneath, because the assumption is the dirt underneath has some of the blood and some of the liquids from the body, and therefore, you know, like the Zaka people come around, they collect all the everything that's around. So, like that, you have to take the earth from underneath, some of it with you, and you and then you can rebury the person. Shnayim, if you find two, notzlan ve'et fusato. You can do the same thing. Two is also not indicative. But matzah shlosha, right, magic number always, right? It's one or two, we always say, but three, like leket shecha, you know, those kind of things, all sorts of things. Matzah shlosha, im yesh benehem me'arbad shmone, harezo shchunat kvarot. Once you find three in a space of between four and eight amot, this is going to be important for our purposes, because Okay, we have to figure out why between 4 and 8. If you find three bodies, remember our picture, right? So we have a chatzer, okay? We have a chatzer that leads to, let's go with the basic opinion, to two caves, okay? Forget about the three, let's say. Okay, we had a machloket. Is the cave 4 by 6? Or is the cave, let's make another picture, okay? Or is the cave 6 by 8? You remember that? Okay, now, if you find a keder, okay, this Mishnah seems to be implying that the cave size was 4 by 8. Because it's saying, right, remember how the caves went, right? The graves, right? The graves come off of the walls here, right? So in a 4 by 8, the graves are either going to be in an 8 amo range, right? Or in a 4 amo range. You're going to have a number of bodies lined up within 4 amo, which would be the opposite wall from the entrance. Remember, you walk into the cave, the entrance is 4 amo. And again, this doesn't match any of the opinions we saw, because the opinions were either it's 4 by 6 or 6 by 8. So let's assume right now that this Mishnah is a whole different opinion, which is 4 by 8. So if you walk into the catacomb that's 4 by 8, you're going to walk in. To your left will be, and to your right, will be a bunch of graves in a space of 8 amo. And opposite you will be a bunch of graves in a space of 4 amo. So they say if you find three bodies that are within somewhere between 4 to 8 amot, then we can assume that it was a burial cave. Okay? Harezo shchunat kvarot. And then what are you not allowed to do? Then you can't move them. If it was a burial spot, then clearly they were buried there permanently, and therefore you can't take them out. Now there's a whole debate. What do you mean three within a space of 4? Didn't we say you have to have an ama in between them? So some of Freshim say that in this Mishnah, not only do they disagree about the 4 by 8, but they also disagree about how much space needs to be in between. And that you actually could have fit three graves on a 4 amah wall, and then you would just have to have less space. You would have, I think, 2 tefachim in between each one. I think that's how it works. I forget. But basically, or maybe, I forget exactly the, you can figure out the math, but basically, it would have to be that, according to this, you could have three within a space of 4 amah. Okay. Now, what happens if you find? So if you find these three, number one, you already have to assume it's a shchunat kvarot. You cannot take out the bones and move them. Ubodek, but that's not enough. Now that you already found, right, well, generally a burial cave is not just three graves. It's got, number one, it's got graves nearby and within that same cave. Number two, there was generally a chatzer, and on the other side of the chatzer was another cave. Right? So basically, once you have here, let's say you find at the outermost point, so what do you have to do now? Bodek mimenu lahalan esrim ama. You'd have to check 20 amot this way to get into the next, right? Because basically you want to cross the chatzir. It sounds like you probably have to check 20 amot in every direction to make sure that there's no other burial cave nearby. Okay, because again, the assumption was there were usually two, right, or even four, depending on who you hold by. Okay, now, the Esrim Amah we're going to have to work out a little. I'll already set up the problem for you. According to this, let's say there's 8 Amot within, yeah, you remember, the caves are empty in the middle, and the graves go out to the sides. So if you want to check to the far side, how far do you have to go? So you have to go, let's say you're at the 4. So you go 8 amo toward, right, through the end of that cave. Then you hit the chatzir, which is 6 by 6, okay? So the chatzir is 6 by 6. Okay, let's just write there. 6 by 6. So then you have another 6 amo. That gets you to 14.
It's either 6 by 8.
What?
We didn't say
6
by
6. The chatzir is 6 by 6. The chatzir in the middle, not the
right.
caves.
Right, right, right.
The caves are either 4 by 6 or 6 by 8. But the chatzir in the middle,
six,
in between the two ma'arot, we said was 6 by 6. So you have the 8 length of the cave. Then you go another 6 of the chatzir. That's 14. And then presumably you go another 8, which would get you to, we're up to 14, which would get you to 22. And this says 20 amot. So there's a bit of a problem here, how you get there. We'll talk about this soon. Okay, so now matzah chad b'sof esrim ama bodeg mimenu lahalan esrim ama shavaglayim ledavar. Okay, well let's stop here for a second. Once you find 20 amot farther, you have to check another 20 amma. Now, the big question is why? You know, you've already found this whole cave. What are you looking for further than that? So the assumption is that maybe you found a different cave, and maybe you have to go back the other direction and search 20 amma that way, and maybe the end of this burial cave is the other way, and maybe you have to look there. Or some people say maybe once there's one cave, there's an assumption there's another cave. So maybe you have to, there was an assumption that maybe just because there's, you know, one katzir with two ma'arot, it could be that there's more ma'arot in the general area. There's even some different gersaot exactly about what this is, but let's just go with that opinion, that basically you have to check because maybe you can assume that there's other burial caves in the area, so you have to check another 20 amma. Okay. Sharagayim ladavar, she'ilu mitchila metza'o notzlo ve'et fusato. So now they're saying, what does it mean, raglayim ladavar? In other words, even though, what do they say? I forgot to point this out. What does it say? If you go 20 amma and you find one person buried, not three. Even if you just find one, you already have to keep checking. Now why? Before, what are they saying here? Raglayim ladavar means there's already sufficient proof to push us forward to think that there's more stuff here, as opposed to, right, she'ilu mitchila metza'o, if you had first stumbled upon that one grave and you hadn't found the others, you wouldn't have to check anything. You'd be able to pick up that body and move it with the dirt and you'd be done, because it would only be one. But now that you found the three first and then you find the one, that one's going to be much more significant than having found it on its own.
What dirt is in the cave? You're in a cave. What dirt are you
moving? What dirt are you moving? Right. I guess there's an assumption that first of all, it's not so clear that the bottom of the cave isn't full of dirt. There's an assumption there must be some dirt in the cave. And therefore, you're removing some of the dirt that's underneath. But the other assumption here is not that you're in a cave. The assumption is that the cave eroded, and it's not there anymore. And you are trying to, well, you missed the beginning, which is people are going on Aliyah LaRegel, and we want to check the paths to make sure there's no tumma. So they're looking under the ground, and they find a body. So they're assuming that it had once been part of a cave. That's the assumption here. Okay, so they're not actually in a cave right now. Okay, so now let's try to figure out, why did we bring this? Amar mar, me'arbad shmo ne'mane. Who does this Mishnah hold like? If we're talking about a space of 4x8, mani, irabanan ha'amre dalet amod al shech. Right? If we say it's chachamim, they said 4x6, and this is presumes 4x8. Irabi Shimon ha'amar shech al shmone. Right? If it's Rabbi Shimon holds shech al shmone. So therefore, now I kind of said, well, maybe this is some unique opinion that is 4x8, but that's not the way the Gemara wants to read it. The Gemara figures if there's a machloket in our Mishnah about what the size is, this other Mishnah must fit in with one of those opinions. So we're going to have to explain, even though, now remember, they didn't say the cave was 4x8. What did they say? They say if you find it within a space of 4 to 8 amo, we can assume that it was bodies buried there. So now they're going to have to figure out who does this hold by. Lo olam Rabbi Shimon hi. So now they say this must be Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Why does it make more sense as Rabbi Shimon? Because it goes up to 8 amot, right? And Rabbanan, right, said it's 4x6. So it wouldn't make sense that you'd be looking in a space of up to 8 amot. So they're going to go with Rabbi Shimon first. And they're going to say this must be Rabbi Shimon, who holds 6x8. And then they're going to have to explain, wait a minute. Bahai Tanahu, but if, by the way, there's two different versions of what Rabbi Shimon actually held. Okay? It's actually going to be another thing, but in terms of the size, there's two different versions of what Rabbi Shimon held. So now we have a braita that, again, some other ways of interpreting it, but we're going to go with the interpretation that the Tanakh, that there's a machloket here within this braita about what Rabbi Shimon said. Even though the Tanakhama doesn't relate to Rabbi Shimon, the assumption is that we're going to go with our Mishnah holds like the first opinion of this braita about what Rabbi Shimon says, which is, Ditanya mitza'an ritzufin, if you found them next to each other, ve'ein b'nehem midalet amot ad shmone, yesh lehen tfusa, ve'ein lehem shkunat kfarim. If you found them, a whole bunch of bodies together in a very small area, and they're not between 4 and 8, which really means they're not 4 amot, it's less than 4 amot. You don't really need to say ad shmone, but they just say it that way anyway. Right? That sounds like bodies were just thrown into a spot, right? If you find a lot of bodies, it sounds like a kever achim, right? They just threw the bodies. And it's not 4 amot wide. Yesh lehen tfusa, meaning You have to pick them up with their dirt. Ve'ein lahem shchunat kvarot, meaning you're allowed to move these bodies. It's not considered a permanent grave. Seems like they were just buried there randomly. Now, what do you notice here before we continue in this opinion? The assumption is this is one of the ways of understanding Rabbi Shimon, okay? There was a machloka tana'im, what Rabbi Shimon actually held. And according to this, what do you see? Again, the size is 4x8. So we're left with, there's Ravana who says 4x6, Rabbi Shimon holds 6x8, and another opinion about Rabbi Shimon that he held 4x8, okay? And that you can find in this Braita. The second opinion in this Braita doesn't disagree about the size, disagrees about a different issue, about the Ritzufin. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, okay, a different Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi of Yehuda, says in the name of Rabbi Shimon, Ro'im et ha'emtza'im ki'ilu einan, v'hash'ar mitzdarfim midalat amot ad shmone. Now he says that what? The middle one, when you have a whole bunch of bodies piled up in a space of narrower than 4 amot, what's the assumption? You imagine as if all the middle ones aren't there. You look at the fact that there's one at the end, one at the other end, and one in the middle, and what do you say? Let's ignore the fact that there's a ton of other ones. Let's assume that what? Originally, this was a burial cave with the three bodies there. And then, over time, other bodies got added to there. But that doesn't mean that, you know, some of them were here permanently, in which case you don't know which ones, in which case you can't remove any of them. Okay? So that's his opinion. That doesn't really have anything to do with our issue about the size. So again, we're left with Rabbanan hold, it's 4x6. Rabbi Shimon, there's two ways to read Rabbi Shimon, either 6x8 or 4x8. And the Mishnah in Olot and Nazir matches the second opinion of Rabbi Shimon, not the one we saw in our Mishnah, but the one that we see from this Braita.
Seems really strange that here they have a path, and now all of a sudden they're noticing that there are burial caves?
It's all the underground. It's like any excavation.
If they check every year, why are they discovering it now?
Oh, if they check every year, right. I guess earth moves, things, you know, they wanted to just always make sure that there aren't dead bodies around. Right, it's a good question why they have to do this. Well, you have to remember, the rains come also, and the roads are not like our roads when right, everything gets moved around in those heavy rains with just dirt on the ground. Mm-hmm. So that could also be a reason. So things get moved.
There's a modern application to this.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. We're building a house in Beit Shemesh, and we were not, it's a whole new neighborhood. We were not allowed to build until the Antiquities Authority came and checked and made sure that there were no graves.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have permission from the Antiquities Authority.
Right, so it's very interesting.
Yeah. Because there were graves in the area.
Uh-huh. Wow. Cool. Mm-hmm. So now they say, wait a minute. B'mayu kimta, you're going to say this Mishnah is Kirabi Shimon, but Ema Seifa, there's a problem with the second part of the Mishnah. To say this Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon doesn't match the rest of the Mishnah. What does it say in the second part of the Mishnah? Bodei kemenu lahalan esrim ama. Mane. I Rabbi Shimon esrim v'tartin havyan. I Rabbanan tim nesrei havyan. Now they say, wait a minute. If you go like Rabbi Shimon, then these numbers don't work out. Because what does Rabbi Shimon say? It's 4x8. So we said, we already did the math before. If you find some dead bodies, then what do you have to do? You have to go to the farthest point where the cave could have ended. So how much do you measure? We said 8 of that burial cave entrance area, 6 of the chatzer, which would be 14, and another 8 through the next cave until you get to the burial plots that are on the other side. So that would be 22. So that doesn't match Rabbi Shimon. So the second part of the Mishnah saying it's 20 amot doesn't make sense according to Rabbi Shimon. What about Rabbanan? Let's try Rabbanan. Rabbanan say it's 4x6. So how far would you have to go? You'd have to go 6 of the first mara, 6 of the middle chatzer, and 6 of the next mara. It would be 18. So neither number matches. So now we're really stuck because not only does it not match Rabbi Shimon, but it doesn't even match Rabbanan. So what's this number of 20 amot? So now, instead of the Gemara saying that this is all Rabbi Shimon, like we said, now we're going to switch and say, oh, maybe the Mishnah is really Rabbanan. Okay, so what do they say? And how do you get to 20? We're going to have to figure out how you get from 18 to 20. It's going to go back to our Pythagorean theorem from yesterday. Okay, La'olam Rabbanan hi. Ukigon debadak ba'alachsona. What does it mean, right? Let's get to our diagonal. It means that what you do is you go from where you are and you go another six straight. Then you go another six through the chatzir. And then when you get to the next cave, you go in a diagonal. Why do you go in a diagonal? Because if you go in a diagonal, you'll make sure that if there's short people buried or longer people buried, you'll at least be able to cover your grounds, and that will be closer to eight. You know, in other words, instead of six, you'll get up to eight. Again, their math was a little bit loose in terms of their numbers and how they got, but it'll be around eight. Okay, so they say you go in a diagonal, and that resolves the issue. So now they say, wait a minute. Now, first of all, you're still left with the problem. Rabbanan said 4 by 6, and this says 4 by 8, so they don't really seem to relate to that right now. So then they say, wait a minute. Umidaha balachsona, hanami balachsona. Why, if you're checking on a diagonal, why are you only checking the second cave on a diagonal? Why don't you check also the first cave on a diagonal? By the way, it's not clear which cave you check on a diagonal. I'm not sure it really matters. But or maybe it does, I don't know. I don't think it really matters.
But that's a good question.
Right, so if you look in the Rashbam, he says, V'ken katab b'perish Rabbeinu Chanan el klomar shabadag ma'ara v'shona ba'alachson. Ki ha'ma'ara ha'vein... Okay, so maybe that one, they check ba'alachson. Either which way, they say, well, why don't you check both ba'alachson? In other words, if that's why you want to check, so now obviously what's the answer? This is classic. And then if you check balachsona, then you get to esrim v'tarte, you get to 22, havyan. So what do they say? Chada balachsona amrinan, tre balachson lo amrinan. We don't make him bother to do both, right? It's a tircha to go balachson. It's easier to just go in a straight line, you have less to check, right? If you think about it, we don't want you to check too much extra, and we don't want to burden you so much. So what do? You know, you're working for the city, for the country, you're trying to find Tuma and Tara, whatever. So we say, go through at least one of them ba'alachson so that you can check, but you don't have to do both ba'alachson. And that's how we get to the 20. Okay, a bit of a weak answer. Rav Shisha, Bered Rav Idi Amar, here comes, we go back to Rav Shisha, who yesterday we said, remember, he said somewhere else about the Nephel. Here also, let's say it was a Furat Nephalim. So now, here's where he said it. Rav Shisha, Bered Rav Idi Amar, La'olam Rav Shimon Hi. Okay, so again, now, remember, we said we didn't really resolve how you could say it was Rabbanan. If Rabbanan say 4 by 6, how'd you get to 8? We didn't resolve that issue. We only resolved that the second part was Rabbanan, which, by the way, some of the Mefarshim explained that the assumption was when they were at that stage of the Gemara that the beginning part was Rabbi Shimon and the second part was Rabbanan, which, you know, once in a while we see a Mishnah where one is, right, one is Rabbi Shimon, one is Rabbanan, and we say, how could that be? How could the Mishnah be according to two different opinions? And they say, it doesn't bother us. Misha shanazo, lo shanazo. Now, what's strange here is the Gemara doesn't bring up the question and answer it that way, which it should have, but some of the Mefarshim talk about that. But he gives an answer that would bring us back to Rabbi Shimon. It is Rabbi Shimon, and really the cave is 4 by 8, so why do we only have to check 20? Because generally the cave is 4 by 8. But if you have a cave, now the other time he was talking about, we were trying to use his opinion to say maybe some of the graves are Nephilim graves. Now he's going to say maybe the whole Ma'ara was a Ma'ara for Nephilim, for infants or stillborns. So they say, so therefore, right? And therefore, generally it's 4 by 8, but in this case, it's going to be 4 by 6. So how does that work? Okay, so now we have, let's say we have 6 because it's a kever nifalim. Another 6 becomes 12. So it's a regular cave would be 8. But this one's 6. So 6 plus 6 is 12. And then another 8 of the next cave. And that gets us up to 20. Perfect. Okay? Perfect, but a little strange because how, right? How, in other words, this is talking about a standard case, right? So maybe some of the pressures say maybe it was a case where he found Nephilim. You know, in other words, okay. A little tricky. Anyway, what do we say here? But then if that's the case, umidaha benifle, hanami benifle. But wait a minute, right? And then Chimnei Shrei Havi, and if we're already saying it's a Kfura Nephilim, maybe the other side is a Kfura Nephilim, and then you only have to check 18. You only have to check, right, 18, because you'd have 6, 6, and 6, right? 6 of the Ma'ara, 6 of the Chatzir, and then another 6 of the final cave. So again, what do they answer? Just like before, Chad Benifle Amrinan, Tarte Benifle Lo Amrinan. It's not the most common thing to have two Nephilim graves right next to each other. Generally, you'd have one Nephil grave and one, you know, you'd have a, first of all, I'm sure in general they didn't have a whole thing designated just for Nephilim, because like we said before, right, it made more sense the way we're suggesting you have a family plot, and you know, you might end up with some Nephilim and some people, but now they're suggesting that maybe they would have sometimes these an entire Ma'arad just for Nephilim, and then on the other side would be regular people who died. So basically, that's how this. These are all, I would say, a little bit of weak answers to try to figure out why they said 20 and not 18 and not 22. They have trouble coming up with that.
Because this is something they're so strict about, Tumah and Tahara. They're making such an effort. Why not search two more Amot?
Well, again, there's a question of how much we make you go crazy, right? And how much we, you know, this whole mission is somewhat complicated because you find these dead bodies and it's not really clear. It's hard to search. It's hard to start figuring out how deep do you have to go down. We didn't really discuss that, right?
So we look how wide, right? When they're not going in a straight line across, they're presumably checking out to the sides as they go. And it's not just a this. It's they've got to be good looking when they think they're in the cave, the width of the cave as well as the length.
Right. It doesn't really talk about the width and going the other direction. I think there's an assumption that you found the graves in a particular direction, so then you were able to figure out which way you need to go. And as imagine that you found them here, okay, on the sides of the grave. So if you go 20 Amma, you'll definitely, right, you'll cut across that way, right? But if you'll much sooner get to graves because it's right, you know, let's say it's 4 Amma wide, so you'll another 4 Amma, you'll already get to somewhere. So here they're talking about the longest way possible. In other words, what's the farthest distance you could get to and still claim that these were part of the cave? Okay, and I assume you're going in all different, like I said, it didn't really say this, but I assume you're doing a diameter around of 20 Amma in every direction, because and then you kind of cover your bases. And it's not clear whether you found them in a particular direction, then you know. There's also a bunch of different interpretations about how you found the three. Were they all three in a straight line, or did you find two like this and one perpendicular, and then you can assume that it was a burial cave? The Rabbeinu Tam says that they must have been perpendicular to each other, and that's why you can assume it was a burial cave, because some were buried one way and some were buried the other way, and that you're in this, you know, some here and some there. The whole sugya is quite tricky, and there's a lot of different interpretations. I didn't bring everything in terms of what exactly is going on here. The last case we have to deal with now is this issue of we saw before that according to Rabbi Shimon, in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, that we say, Ro'ina te emtsayim ki ilu einam. If you have a lot of people, right, a lot of dead bodies, then we can kind of pretend that some of them weren't here and that some of them were, and then we can still have our number that would then say this was a real burial plot, even though it appears on the surface that, oh, people were just dumped here and it wasn't permanent, but because maybe some were first there and others weren't, right? And we look at it as if it's not there. Whereas Tanakhama disagreed. So now we're going to have a question about this. V'rami d'Rabbanan ad'Rabbanan, v'rami d'Rabbi Shimon ad'Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbanan contradict the Rabbanan somewhere else, and Rabbi Shimon contradicts his opinion somewhere else. Okay, in other words, their opinions here, the Tanakhama says, we don't do that ignoring. If you have a whole bunch of bodies piled up, okay, we don't say, oh, we just, it's as if they weren't here. Okay, it has to be this three in that space. Otherwise, if it's more than three, you wouldn't think it was a real burial plot. And Rabbi Shimon, who says, we look at it as if they're not there, right? And then we say this really is a real burial plot, and they were buried here permanently, they don't match their opinions in a different case. What's this other case? Okay, Ditznan, there's a Mishnah in Kilayim that reads like this. Kerem hanatua al pachome arba amot. If you have a kerem that's planted with less than 4 amot in between the rows, okay, which we said generally a kerem, you have to have space in between the rows. If you don't have that minimum space, what's going to happen? The stuff isn't going to grow properly. If it's not going to grow properly because they're too close together, then Rabbi Shimon Omer, eino kerem. This is not a kerem. It's not a vineyard, in which case you can plant other things and it won't be kilayim. Okay, you won't be over on kilayim if you planted something else there. The chachamim omrim, hare ze kerem. This is a kerem. Viroim et haemtzayim ke'ilu einan. Here we have it. What do Rabbanan say? Just like by us, you view it as if, right, the two, let's say you have three rows and there's 2 amot in between. So you ignore the middle one and now you have 2 rows with a 4 amot distance between them.
Here you're talking about tumah. where you're talking about.
Yeah, so it's a different topic. However, what happens here, this concept of Ru'im Atayim Sayim Ki'ilu Einam was said in the name of Rabbanan here and the name of Rabbi Shimon there, and each disagreed in each case, so we have a flip here. Okay, so how are we going to explain? So obviously they're going to say the cases are different. So now they say, Kasha de Rabbanan de Rabbanan, Kasha de Rabbi Shimon de Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so now they say, de Rabbi Shimon de Rabbi Shimon lo Kasha. Don't worry, that's not difficult. Hatam lo nate inche adata li akir. Hacha zimnin dimitramele ben ashmashot umikre umanchele. Rabbi Shimon, when it comes to kerem, he says, this is not a kerem, because, one second, they didn't do it al data la'akir, right? They planted them on purpose. They didn't plant them so that they'll be uprooted. They planted them on purpose. Now, why they did that, we don't really know. But they planted them on purpose, and they didn't say, oh, I'm planting these, and I'm eventually going to uproot them. Now, in the end, they're not going to all grow. But he planted them on purpose to be there, and that's not a kerem. Nobody plants their kerem like this. And he did it on purpose. Whereas the burial, we assume that what happened, maybe it was Ben Ashmasho, and he didn't have time to bury the person, so he put the person down in the spot, and then something must have happened to him. Maybe the relative died, or maybe, you know, something, obviously some onus happened. He never got back to rebury the person, but he certainly didn't intend for it to be permanent. Whereas the kerem, he intended it to be planted there. Okay, and therefore, we can't just say, oh, ignore it, right? Pretend it's not there. Whereas because the person wasn't put there on purpose, we can say, pretend he's not there. Derabanana, derabana nami lo kasha. Hacha kevan deminavel lo mikre kever. This is a disgusting way to bury people. That's not a kever. You can't call that a kever when people are piled on top of each other. But hatam, when you planted your kerem that way, memar amar, he could say, hey minayu de shapir, shapir, udalo shapir lahave litzive. Whichever one will work, and whatever else, I'll burn, okay? And I won't use it. So basically, when it comes to the kever, we can say ro'im otam ki'ilu einam. But when it comes to the kerem, we can't say, one second, right, they say hareze kerem, because we can't just ignore them, right? We can say it's a kerem because we can say, one second, right, ro'im otam sayim ki'ilu einam, because his point was, whichever one works will work, and the other one I'll get rid of. It's like the opposite theory of the other one, that he was intending to get rid of some of this. Whereas the kever, we just say, this is despicable, you can't call this a kever. Whereas the kerem can be called a kerem, because eventually some of the stuff will grow and some of it won't, and that will be your kerem. Okay? Hadron alacha mocher perot. Finish up that perek, finish with the burial stuff, which is quite complicated. Okay, new Mishnah. We'll just do the Mishnah, and then we'll stop here for today. Ha'omer l'chaveiro. We're back to selling things, right? We had a mocher peiro. Before that, we had a mocher et hasfina. Before that, we had, remember, a mocher et habayit. Now we're talking about somebody sells, interestingly, it doesn't start with ha'mocher, but he's basically selling a field, and he says, beit kor afar ani mocher l'cha. I'm selling you, okay, which is a size. It's how much you can plant a kor of wheat in, or of, actually, some people say it's a kor of barley, which might be a little different. Which is basically, right, if you look in the Rashbam, he explains it, kishior beit kor afar ani mocher lecha, dahainu lefi cheshbon sa'atayim, according to cheshbon of sa'atayim b'chatzer ha'mashkan, dahainu mea al chamishim. The assumption is the length, the size of the mishkan, which was 100 by 50, is the size that would you would be able to plant for sa'atayim. U'mitzan tzev cheshov beit kor, which is 15 times that. Because, right, which is a huge amount, because I think it's 75,000 square amot it comes out to. Because if you remember, a beit kor is 30 se'ah. So if Chatzer HaMishkan, 100 by 50, is 2 se'ah, right, sa'atayim, then the 15 times that will be this beit kor. So you tell someone, I'm selling you a beit kor. Ani mocher lecha, hayu sham nika'im amukim asarat tfachim, os la'im gvohim asarat tfachim. If you have areas, basically that can't be planted, you have these big cracks, okay, that are 10 tfachim deep, or you have these big rocks that are 10 tfachim high, which are big enough to prevent you from being able to plant there. Einam nimdadim ima. Okay, the assumption is we're talking about here, not where I said, I'm selling you this Beit Kor Afar, okay, and you pointed, and then the guy knew that there were rocks in it or places that couldn't be planted. But it's a case where you say, I'm going to sell you a plot of land, and the guy never saw the plot. You say, I'm going to sell you a plot of land that's a Beit Kor. Then you have to give a Beit Kor of land that can be planted. So if there's areas in it that can't be planted, you have to deduct that from the amount and add more from, you know, add more space to it. Pachomikan, if they're lower than 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim, you know, 10 tefachim deep or 10 tefachim high, if it's less than that, then nimdedimima. Okay, then it counts as part. Then it's just batel. Vimamarlo ki beit kor afar. But if you say approximately a beit kor afar, then obviously what are we going to say? Afilu ayusham nekeim amukim yoter me'asarat tefachim. Hare elu nimdedimima. Okay, then even if they're more than that, we're going to say that's fine. You don't have to give any extra because you said kid bait, right? This again goes back to the whole thing about be very careful how you word things, you know, whether you word things this way. You know, if you're the seller, you might be better off showing the person what you're selling them instead of just saying it in words, because then you protect yourself. Or if you're the buyer, maybe you're better off not looking at the plot, because then you're responsible, right, for anything that you... It's like when you rent a car and you mark down all the scratches. You know, if you hadn't looked at it, maybe you could claim, oh, there was a scratch here. But if you mark down all the things and then you forget to write something down, then you're stuck, right? I mean, you might be stuck anyway. They might not, you know... But anyway, this is, again, one of those things about be careful how you word things, because it will come to, you know, you'll have to, you might have to pay up more later if you don't. Okay, we'll stop here.
I have a question. There was